The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. Bob Dio is my new producer and engineer. He's doing a fine job on the other side of the glass. Thank you, Bob, for your support here on the Buckmaster Show. And together, we do welcome you to the day after the election. Wednesday, November the 7th. Candidates only spent, Sarah Garrett Gasson, $5 billion. Yeah. And have been talking and talking, I mean, for in some cases years, right? Yep. So we can kind of take a deep breath. I was down here hosting with John C. Scott our election night coverage, and it was great. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, about any surprises. But anyway, Sarah Garrett Gasson is here. Sarah is editorial page editor and columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Her colleague is with me and Sarah in studio as well, Tim Steller, columnist for the Star. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Were you up late last night?
Yep. I was up, obsessively checking results.
I bet you were.
Having conversations.
And what are we going to, what's this going
to
mean?
Yeah, went to the parties, Republicans and Democrats.
Out and about, being a fly on the wall at the parties.
Fly in the honey, maybe.
Yeah, and Sarah was out, I'm sure, monitoring everything.
Actually, I was
in bed at
taking a first-time voter to go vote.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Young person, old person, immigrant?
A friend from my basketball team, and he's mid-30s, had never voted before, wasn't sure where to vote. We both got to practice about the same time, and he was saying he hadn't voted yet, he wasn't going to be able to, so we got in my car and took him to his polling place.
Now, that doesn't qualify as ballot harvesting, does it?
No, not when you take the actual person.
There you go. I mean, you weren't taking your friend's ballot to the polls. You were actually giving a ride to a friend and doing your duty as a citizen of this republic. So on behalf of all of the citizens, we thank you very much.
Well, thank you. It was important.
All right. Why don't we begin with kind of the marquee race that is, Tim, still undecided, right?
Yep.
Sinema and Martha McSally. Is it what? It's within about one percentage point.
Yeah, it's a difference of 16,000 votes in the results I'm looking at here. There's basically it's undecided. Martha McSally has the lead. And it's always better to have the lead than not to have the lead.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some hundreds of thousands of votes still to be counted in Maricopa County, not to mention some tens of thousands in Pima County.
Mm-hmm.
So they have the potential to turn the outcome towards Sinema if they run that way.
You know what I found interesting? What? I looked at the numbers, and guess what? If there had been no Green Party candidate, I think we'd be having a different conversation right now, because the Green Party candidate pulled in about 2% of the vote, and I would assume that Green Party people would be more toward the liberal side.
Well, I think...
Or am I...
I think that can be an oversimplification in that sometimes the Green Party folks just don't want to... They don't see much of a difference between the Democrats and the Republicans in the party structure, and also some of those people may not have voted at all.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I think the problem is when we'll never really know, because the Green Party candidate got into the race, got on the ballot, and then said, "Oh, I'm withdrawing and throwing my support," which is the most useless thing to do. If you're actually going to do that, then don't get on the ballot in the first place.
Right, and don't do it the weekend before the election.
2 weeks before might have made a difference. But I agree with Sarah that you can't assume that the Greens would have gone, especially for Kyrsten Sinema, who ironically was a Green years ago, but is has refashioned herself into such a moderate that it turns off many far left leaning people, especially people such as Greens.
All right. Let's leave that race behind for a few minutes and let's turn to the number one chief executive for the state of Arizona, and that will be Doug Ducey. Doug will have another four-year term. It's interesting, and I said this last night on our election night coverage, Tim and Sarah, that I believe the governor's race ended when Governor Ducey put forward his package for teachers last April.
I think it was closer than that. I think David Garcia, even though it was taken out of context, with the abolish ICE and not recognize, they didn't run a good campaign. It was one issue. It was a good issue, but you can't answer every single question about economic development, about infrastructure, about taxes, about healthcare, with education, mm-hmm. because it's such a long-term goal. I mean, it's such a long-term thing to do. It's not like you can just...
Yeah, you don't get the benefit next year from starting to educate kindergartners well.
Right, so. And it's something that when that is your only note, that just starts to ring really bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not just that. I would say... He didn't adjust. So Ducey, as you say, Bill, Ducey negated Garcia's main issue, his only issue, education, in April 2018 with his 20 by 2020 plan. And then Garcia never adjusted. As Sarah's saying, you know, he had very little beyond education he was willing to talk about. It, beyond saying that, yeah, they did something, but not enough. Well, he may be right, but that just wasn't an adequate platform to run on.
And that was part of the reason what you've just been articulating, Sarah Garrett Gasson, as editorial page editor, that was one of the reasons the decision was made at the Arizona Daily Star to not endorse Dr. Garcia for governor.
Right. When we saw him several years ago come in during the race for superintendent of public instruction, it was different people on the board, but we all said, wow, that was a really, really strong candidate. I think he'd be great at that job. And we thought he should run for governor. I remember having that conversation. But then he did run for governor. And he was impressive in an interview with us in person, did not do well in the debates. And when we talked about this endorsement for a long time, hours and hours, and kept going back and forth and back and forth, because education is one of our, it is mm-hmm. our single top issue.
It's your signature issue right now.
Right. But when it came down to it, Ducey just had more experience to offer. And it went beyond just the advantage of being an incumbent.
Mm-hmm. Tim, what do you think the big surprise was out of this election?
Well, I'll take a kind of a under-noticed phenomenon, which was there wasn't a blue wave, but the extent to which Democrats did make gains, it was in the state House of Representatives.
Yes, indeed.
People thought the Dems might tie up the state Senate. It appears they have gained nothing, so they're still down 17 to 13 in the state Senate, but in the House... the split was 35 Republicans to 25 Democrats previously, and now it could be as small as 31 Republicans to 29 Democrats, which is really significant because mm-hmm. it means if you can turn one Republican in your favor, you're able to block legislation or pass legislation that you wouldn't otherwise be able to.
And that's been under the radar screen, and Senator Farley was posting on Facebook about that. He will be... my guest on Friday. It'd be interesting to get his take on the election. But he was saying that's kind of the issue or the story that's been under the radar screen about this upcoming legislative session and the impact that's going to have.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
All right. We have in CD2, we have Ann Kirkpatrick will be going back to Washington, to Congress. Sarah, Leah Marquez Peterson, who is a name and has been around Tucson forever with the Hispanic Chamber, the campaign just did not resonate.
No, and I found that kind of surprising, actually, given how well-known Lea Marquez Peterson is in Southern Arizona and all the work she has done with her Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. She's very active in the community, but I think to look at her campaign, she was talking about things that it didn't really ring true. Like, you can tell when someone's saying something because that's what they're supposed to say for the
getting
campaign.
Getting advice from DC people or whatever. And I'll tell you, she would have been a lot better off, Tim, if she had said, I'm not taking any of these consultants from Washington. I know this community. I don't need these people consulting me about how to run this race.
Yeah, she was a little bit packaged as a candidate and inaccessible. However, I would note, I think it was a 5% victory that Hillary Clinton had over Trump in CD2. So that margin was going to be hard no matter who ran on the Republican side, because there's such an anti-Trump feeling among those who voted against him. So, you know, with Ann Kirkpatrick running, I mean, I think any competent Democrat would have had a really good chance, even against a competent Republican. That said, talking to people last night at the Republican event, I heard some comments like, did she really want to run?
Yes. You know, was her heart in it?
Was her heart fully in it? Mm-hmm. And just the fact of needing to ask the question was enough to show why she didn't win.
Right. It's time to talk about my favorite bakery, Sarah.
You love the bakery.
I do love the bakery, and I really love it around the holidays because they're getting ready with the pies and all the breads for the Thanksgiving table. That's Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Tim, have you been up there yet? That's not really your part of town, is it?
There's a Fifth Amendment that I'm going to plead at this time.
Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, but in your heart, you would probably love a sandwich right now from Mona's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or a Danish Kringle.
Right in my arteries.
There you go. Steve and the team, they're up early baking, and of course, they've got the lunch right now ready for you. Have that bag of chips. And I don't know where Steve gets these great pickles. They're really nice. You know, a nice thick pickle really adds, enhances a nice sandwich.
I don't think there's a truer statement that could be made today.
Okay, and I will throw out my favorite sandwich, and that would be the hot turkey with kind of the red bell pepper and with the cheese on the rustic bread. Anyway, go to my website, buckmastershow.com, a link to Mona's Danish Bakery and all of our great sponsors. We're going to much more to talk about, maybe some surprises with the propositions. Sarah Garrett Gasson is here, and Tim Steller, both from the Star. Appreciate them coming over from the plant. We'll be right back. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Only the beginning, Chicago. New music, bumper music here on the program. And both Sarah Garrett Gasson and Tim Steller from The Star know that my music leanings harken back to the golden era of the 1960s.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
Carefully selected.
Carefully selected. This portion of the program presented by Silver City in Grant County. Tim, have you been over there?
Oh, yeah. Love it over there.
Good.
And beyond Silver City to Pinos Altos.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
The cave dwellings.
The Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Yeah. The Pinos Altos is just a few minutes north of Silver City.
Yep.
About 7,000 foot elevation. And that's really a great time of year, Sarah, to over there.
Yes.
You like autumn leaves turning. You grew up in the St. Louis area.
I know
what it's like.
Yes.
That special feeling of the golden autumn.
Yep.
We happened to be over there in the Gila River Valley a year or two ago in October, and it was just fantastic.
Oh, it is. Yeah. So, for more information, southwestnewmexico.org, the complete listing of great places to stay and great recreation opportunities. Tim, let's talk local. Tim and Sarah, the Pima County Board of Supervisors, the three Democrats anyway, have made it clear there's no plan B. Well, what's the plan B now that the roads, the bond thing failed, and failed pretty dramatically?
Yeah, this wasn't just kind of a squeaker. It was pretty definitive against Proposition 463, which was a big plan to improve county roads throughout Pima County. and it went down in flames.
Yeah, I was surprised, or at least, a couple years ago, we had the big bond package that was rejected, but there were several different questions, and one of them on roads almost passed. This time, it lost by even more.
Yes.
And it just, you can't help but look at that and say, people don't trust the county. You know, like it or not, agree or not. I mean, compare Prop 407, the city parks improvement bond plan. It won handily. Those same voters in the city of Tucson vote in the Pima County election.
Yes,
some
they
of
do.
Them, yep. Some probably significant number voted yes on the city bonds and no on the county bonds.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, there's a problem over there. I talked to Steve Christie earlier, who was saying, well, you know, my only solution now is to go to the state legislature and ask for them to allow us to ask voters to raise a sales tax and have it managed by the RTA. So Pima County is out of the business of doing the road repairs because the voters can't trust Pima County, apparently.
All right. City, the parks measure easily passed, and we knew that was going to happen. Sarah, you were with me a couple of Fridays ago. We had Mr. Dennis, the parks director, and he's pretty much sharp guy. He's laid out the full plan of down to the new indoor resurfacing where I do some walking at the at the Udall Center. I mean, it's a pretty detailed plan, and they're going to get on the ball here, which I'm very happy about for our parks. They need it. And also, the voters of Tucson like the odd year elections.
Yes.
They wanted to send a message. This reinforces the effort up in Phoenix to try to get Tucson to go with even year elections. Tim, you're chuckling.
Yeah, I just think it's a funny local character thing. Like, you're not going to change us, you know?
Yeah, it's a little quirky.
Yeah, it's just the way we are, whatever.
Okay, hey, I've only got 5 minutes, Matt, 790-2040. Let's hear what you've got to say, because I do want to ask Tim and Sarah about a couple of other things. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just think it's hilarious. We're going to spend 200 plus million for splash pads and lights at the parks,
right?
And cleaning them up, which I still would like to see a really formal plan explaining what the money's for. And then we can't spend another 200 million or 400 plus for roads, which are I can see where the $400 million for the roads would go.
Yep.
And I blame one issue. I believe that it was a terrible mistake for the County Board of Supervisors to reject the Home Garden funds, and I believe that cast a shadow
on Stone Garden,
their
decision-making.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
I think it's a good
point.
That's
an interesting point. Yeah, I think that did raise a lot of concerns among a lot of county voters. Divided them from the leadership.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
School TUSD, we're going to have Michael Hicks is going to be gone. Adelita Grijalva sticks around for a fifth term, right? So it'd be interesting to see Ms. Counts, who is the new, she was actually the top vote getter.
Yeah, it's quite a surprise. Challenge, usually, you know, in a big race with a lot of candidates, usually the incumbents, maybe through name ID, rise to the top.
But sure.
Layla Counts, first time candidate, correct?
Yes, I believe
was
so.
Was the top vote getter, and Adelita Grijalva avoided being defeated despite an independent expenditure campaign against her alone.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see this new board makeup if everybody, if we can, what is that? Can't we all get along? can't we all get along on the TUSD board? Go ahead.
I want to have hope. I'm a generally hopeful person, but I really, it's like some sort of vortex, like the opposite of the good vortex in Sedona that just sucks people in around the TUSD boardroom and brings out the worst in everyone. So I think having one new member is going to shift the dynamic a bit, but I don't think
it's a lot of big change.
Yeah, it's not going to change the fundamental differences.
Yeah, and of course, you're being a Sagittarius, as am I. We do have kind of that fundamental optimistic streak.
We do, and we tell the truth,
I
even
know,
if it
we do.
Upsets people.
We're kind of forward in that, and sometimes we mouth off, and we shouldn't, and kind of gets us in trouble, but we do speak from the heart. Carl, you are up next. Go ahead.
Yes, I can tell you exactly why the road bonds failed.
Please do.
My friends and I voted against it to a large extent, not just because we don't trust the county to handle the money, but the fact that the county supervisors, the people in the county, and the media made the people who were down at the bottom who were paying for it, that you people don't count. You don't understand. You're too stupid to know what's going on. We know what's best for you. Just the entire attitude that came across just really turned us off. It goes back to the deplorables or the bitter clowners type thing. That attitude, like it or not, came down from the media and from the Board of Supervisors. And so we responded in the only way that we could by saying that, hey, we voted for you. You work for us. We don't work for you.
Okay.
And so that's why it went down.
Thank you, Carl. Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where he's getting that from the news media, but I would just question Carl and other people like him, if you care about roads, what's your plan? You know, because this was kind of a last resort plan, and if voters rejected that, well, you know, they're going to have to be happy with bad roads for a while.
Mm-hmm. And the state offices, pretty much, I know a couple of them are close, Tim, right?
Yeah, so Secretary of State and Superintendent of Public Instruction
are
certainly undecided at this stage.
Yeah.
The Republicans are leading, I think, in both cases. Is that right, Sarah?
Yeah, just by a smidge.
Yes.
Yeah, so it could change. Obviously, the governor, Doug Ducey, won handily, and Treasurer Kimberly Yee, I believe, won handily. Yes.
State Mine Inspector Joe Hart continues on. He's been there forever.
I did want to mention one other person. There's
another
Grijalva in town who has won political office a few times, Raul Grijalva. Interesting thing about him, he won again. That wasn't a surprise. He now becomes chair of the House Natural Resources Committee.
That's right.
I was talking to him last night at the Democratic Party, mm-hmm. and boy, he's going to be really into some interesting stuff. Ryan Zinke, the Secretary of Interior, and Raul Grijalva are going to get to know each other.
Ooh, boy.
And, you know, Zinke's, I guess, an ex-Navy SEAL, but we'll see. I think Raul Grijalva may have a leg up on him with his subpoena power.
All right, I'm over, but it's my show, so I'm going to keep it a few more seconds because I want to talk about Rodney Glassman. He did win, is that correct?
So my understanding is that he's ahead, but that it's not decided yet.
Mm.
Sandra Kennedy still has a shot.
But the two Republicans are, at this point, leading. Yeah,
right.
I believe.
Justin Olson has a seat, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
So I think in summary on the state area, it's all pretty much red, but some of them could go blue.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean, it wouldn't be surprising if one or two of these seats ended up in Democratic hands.
All righty. We will let Tim Steller and Sarah Garrett Gasson get back to work over at their jobs at the Arizona Daily Star. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you very
much.
Hey,
thank you.
Okay. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card?
From Arizona highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. One of my favorite sponsors is Green Things, the place to go for all of your wonderful gardening supplies, 3384 East River Road. But there's more now at Green Things. In their 13-acre site, they now have, believe it or not, Zocalo Village. And when I say believe it or not, these are five shops. You will think you are in old Mexico now when you're visiting Zocalo Village. They've got all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. Zocalo, for years, was over near Country Club and Broadway. Well, they're now over on the Green Things site, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River and just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Check out Green Things at greenthingsaz.com. Tonight at 7 at the Fred Fox School of Music in the Holsklaw Hall on the University of Arizona campus is the 2018 Town and Gown Lecture presented by the Social and Behavioral Sciences Division for Late Medieval and Reformation Studies at the University of Arizona. This year's presenter is Peter Wilson, Professor of History of War at All Souls College at the University of Oxford in England. He's the author of several acclaimed books, including Europe's Tragedy, A History of the 30 Years' War, which won the Society for Military History's Distinguished Book Award. Professor Wilson's lecture tonight is free, it's open to all, and it is titled Tragedy, Violence, and Survival in Germany During the 30 Years' War, 1618 to 1648. Professor Wilson, it's a pleasure to have you on the program.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here in this wonderful city.
The 30 Years' War is regarded as the most destructive in Central Europe before the two world wars of the 20th century. Could you elaborate on, give us kind of the background of the 30 Years' War?
Well, this is a war that killed at least 5 million people. It was a war about the political and religious order of Central Europe. At the time, it was known as the Holy Roman Empire, Europe's largest state. That was larger than modern-day Germany. So, for example, it included what is now the Czech Republic and northern Italy, and parts of France, parts of Denmark.
There are usually sparks for wars. Was there a spark for this one?
Well, the war began in a very dramatic way. It begins with the defenestration of Prague, where three officials of the Habsburg Emperor, the Austrian Habsburgs, were thrown out of a castle window in Prague. Obviously, there was a longer-term background, but this was a deliberately violent act that was staged by a group of discontented Bohemian nobles who wanted to force an issue and to force people to take sides by causing an open breach with their overlord, the emperor.
That's pretty dramatic event, throwing them
yes.
Out of the off the top of the steeple or whatever. Yeah. I mean, and obviously such a dramatic event. And of course, this was before we had the instant CNN and everything else reporting. But I guess, Professor, as they say, the word quickly got around.
Oh yes, yes, it did. And we've got to remember, this is the age when the newspapers invented. So just a few
right.
years before the war starts, you have the beginnings of a regular press. And this event within a year, the number of newspapers, for example, circulating had doubled.
You know, I often reflect, Professor, and you probably understand this, that I thank my lucky stars that I was born when I was born and wasn't unfortunate to have been a witness or perhaps a participant in some of the horrible events of war, reflecting as we come up on the 100-year anniversary, the armistice of the First World War, thinking, gee, I'm glad I wasn't at like the Somme or someplace
yes.
like that, you know,
yeah.
In early July of 1916, I believe, and been one of the unfortunate ones to go over the top. But you got to wonder about the civilian population during the 30 Years' War.
Yes, that's right. I mean, the way in which the civilian population was affected was different back in the 17th century. I mean, you were much more likely to suffer from malnutrition, and that would leave you vulnerable to disease. Most of the people who died died indirectly, in direct effect of the war, largely through disease. But there are also notorious atrocities, most notably the sack of Magdeburg, where 4/5 of the population die.
What was that city?
Magdeburg. That's now in it's a major city in Germany.
Okay.
It was attacked by the imperial forces, and largely through an accident, the city catches fire and the people die in a firestorm.
What were the armaments like at that period?
Were
we talking about firearms?
Yes, we are. Yes, yeah. Right. This is an age of fairly close quarter killing.
Mm-hmm.
Weapons ranges were pretty short. Weapons were relatively inaccurate, so you had to use them en masse. It's a combination of handheld firearms, cannon, and blade weapons that were used at close quarters. So for the men involved in the fighting, this is pretty ferocious stuff.
We're talking with Professor Peter Wilson, and we're talking about the 30 Years' War. We talked about the spark, that incident that touched this off. What were the motivating factors? What were the different interests? People go to war for usually different reasons. What were the reasons of the parties involved, and really who was involved in this war? What countries were involved?
Well, to start with, this is a war that's fought within the Holy Roman Empire, so in the center of Europe, and it's basically about the relative power of the emperor and the German princes. A key factor, of course, is questions of rights, and one of the most important was the right to determine the faith of the subject. So there's a religious dimension to this war, so largely a conflict between Protestants and Catholics.
Go ahead.
And then the thing that complicates it is that none of the parties were actually sufficiently powerful to gain the upper hand. So they call for external assistance. And various other European countries all have a motive for intervening, either to assist the Habsburgs to reassert their authority within the empire, or to precisely to prevent that. So, for example, successively Denmark, Sweden, and then France intervene all to oppose the Austrian Habsburgs.
So the lines were pretty well defined then, right?
Well, they are in some respects.
Like, where was England and France on the?
Well, the England is trying essentially to mediate, and they fail to do so. The French are basically trying to prolong this war rather than directly win it. I mean, their main enemy is Spain, which is also a supporter of the emperor. So they basically want to keep their enemies busy by fueling this war in Central Europe.
About 100 years later, a little bit more than 100 years later, we had something called, I believe, the Seven Years War over in Europe. It was known as the French and Indian War in this country in the middle of the 18th century. And it was a war here in North America that had, of course, its roots in Europe. And I'm wondering, was there any effect on the New World, or was the New World too new to have the 30 Years' War impact at all?
Well, there is certainly
any trade implications.
Definitely, okay. And one of the major sources of wealth that's coming into Europe at this time is, of course, silver, which is largely coming from what is now Mexico, Peru, and
from
Bolivia.
From the Spanish
interests,
yes,
that's right,
and Portuguese interests.
Yep, and the Spanish are major supporters of their cousins, the Austrian Habsburgs, and one of the ways in which they support that is providing silver, providing money. So the opponents of the Habsburgs are trying to intercept that. So in some ways, the conflict that goes on in the Caribbean, and especially in Brazil in this period, is sort of indirectly linked to the 30 Years' War.
All right, we're talking with Professor Wilson from England, and we're talking about the 30 Years' War. We're going to take a break right here. We have in this country, Professor Wilson, Thanksgiving. I don't know if there is an equivalent in England, but what we call Thanksgiving is coming up 2 weeks from Thursday. And in Canada, it's actually in October, closer to the harvest. Is there anything like that in England?
Not
kind of a holiday.
Not at this time of year.
With some kind of a harvest deal.
Yes, but that's generally staged earlier in the year. Yeah, kind of harvest festival. Yeah.
Well, one of our great sponsors is Mona's Danish Bakery, and as you can imagine, Professor, this time of year they'll be very busy with getting ready for their holiday baking, and people will be putting in their orders for their rolls and their pies. In this country, Professor, believe it or not, pumpkin pie is no longer the number one pie. We have a new winner of the pies right now, and that's people prefer apple pie right now. And so Steve, the owner of Mona's Danish Bakery, would be happy to do that for your Thanksgiving table. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Check out Mona's Danish Bakery, their website, monasdanishbaker.com. 579-1959 is their number for Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be back talking with Professor Wilson about the 30 Years' War. And if you have any questions, 790-2040, and we'll get you on the air. Be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, that bumper music, everybody's talking, and that's what we're doing here on KVOI. And we are speaking with the author of several acclaimed books, including Europe's Tragedy, A History of the 30 Years' War, which was an award-winning book. And we are talking with Professor Peter Wilson. He is the professor of history of war at All Souls College at the University of Oxford in England. He is in town for the annual Town and Gown Lecture, presented by the UA Social and Behavioral Sciences Division for Late Medieval and Reformation Studies at the University of Arizona. The lecture is tonight. It's free, open to all, in the UA Fred Fox School of Music in Holsklaw Hall. We're talking about Professor Wilson's area of expertise, and that is the 30 Years' War, which was 1618 to 1648. Were there lulls in that period, Professor, where there was no war?
Yes, there were. There are at least two periods where there's around about a year of peace. I mean, that's one of the, I think, the tragedies of this war, that this is something that could have been wound up. One might not necessarily agree with the party that gained the upper hand, but basically throughout most of the period of the war, the emperor had the upper hand and had essentially won an outright victory. But each time another foreign power intervenes to renew the war and precisely to frustrate that victory.
Are there some lessons for our own time from the 30 Years' War?
Yes, I think there are. I mean, I think you can draw some parallels between this war and some contemporary conflicts, and a lot of people have tried to do this recently, certainly with the wars in the Middle East. One of the things that invites those comparisons is the idea that the 30 Years' War is a religious war. So we sort of see the resurgent role of religion in contemporary conflict. But I think we also are seeing we're entering a world where I think that the sovereign national state is perhaps less powerful, and we see the rise of armed non-state groups, and there are certain parallels with the way in which the 30 Years' War was conducted with armed groups that were not necessarily full states.
How did the war end, and was there a treaty?
Yes, there certainly is. The war ends essentially through a compromise, and I think this is another way in which we can draw some lessons for today. The ultimate success of the peace, which is the Peace of Westphalia, is because virtually all the belligerent parties were invited to the Peace Congress and are participants. So they had a share in making the peace. And the Westphalian Peace is generally seen as a marker of the birth of the modern state system.
I collect all Google Maps, and when you say Westphalia, I believe that's in Germany, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And
yes.
It would be currently where would that be?
That's in the northwest of Germany, and it's called the Peace of Westphalia because it's the actual peace was negotiated in the towns of Münster and Osnabrück, which were declared neutral for during the Peace Congress.
Is there any commemoration of the 400th anniversary of the beginning of the war?
There has been. Obviously, commemorating the outbreak of a right. war is a lot less, say, popular than commemorating a peace. But there's been considerable interest, sort of TV documentaries, a lot of newspaper coverage, multitude of new books. So, yeah, there's been considerable interest.
If I was, if you were an eyewitness to a battle that took place, a very bloody, probably loud battle in the 30 Years' War, what would that have been like, Professor?
Well, one thing you would not actually have seen very much, because this is an age of black powder, so pretty much everything would be soon covered in smoke.
And shrouded in smoke.
Exactly, yeah. And often villages were set on fire in the course of a battle, so that would make it worse. It would be pretty horrible. It's hard to imagine, actually, how horrible it would be.
Were there any tactics, military tactics, that carried forward from the 30 Years' War almost up until the First World War?
Yes, there's a shift towards fighting in lines which maximize firepower. So in the age of smoothbore firearms, so there are certain trends in that direction. There's also the use of artillery to support infantry attacks and the use of cavalry. So the combination of the three main arms that were available at the time does become more sophisticated.
And the use of the horse, people using horse in combat, believe it or not, went on until actually in 1939. When the Germans invaded Poland, Poland had quite a cavalry.
Oh, indeed, and even more. I mean, most of the transport that's used in the Eastern Front, so when the Germans invade the Soviet Union, is actually horse-drawn. I mean, we think of the Second World War as a motorized war, but it's actually a war heavily reliant on animals.
And a little-known piece of trivia, because I'm kind of a history buff of World War II, the last time the Americans used horses in a battle was in the Philippines. In January of 1942 against the Japanese.
Yes,
and
that's right.
So that was there was actually several, I believe, Congressional Medals of Honor that were doled out from that particular battle. And, of course, that was in the defense on the Bataan Peninsula, a heroic defense by Americans in the early stages of World War II. How did you get an interest in this area, Professor Wilson? Did you dress up as a kid and play war like I did and like most kids do? Certainly, it is something that I know I did as a kid.
Yeah, well, certainly playing with toy soldiers and so on. I guess that's one of the major ways a lot of people get into history. I mean, nowadays it's computer games, but it's basically the same impulse, I think. I mean, I find just looking at old maps fascinating and sort of seeing how different political boundaries were and then trying to sort of trying to understand that and so on. So, and also the looking at paintings, looking at images of people from the past, and all of these things draw you in and make you want to find out more.
From, you know, you said this has been sometimes referred to as a religious war. What were the ramifications post-war for religions in Europe?
Well, there is a gradual shift towards a modern understanding of toleration. I mean, one of the problems that leads to the war is that toleration was regarded as a license to serve the devil. And the idea that you could have mutual understanding was anathema to people living in Europe at that time. But the longer-term outcome is very gradually a shift towards a modern understanding of toleration, which is then legally anchored in a constitution.
And the Spanish Inquisition, which came a little bit later, were some of the roots for that perhaps spun out from this beginning of this war?
Well, no. I mean, I think
would that be too much of a conclusion.
Well, we have this awful sort of image of the Spanish Inquisition as actually being so really terrible, but in fact, the operation of the Inquisition actually in Spain was quite tightly regulated by law, and they actually wanted proof. So, for example, if you look at witchcraft, the inquisitors wanted proof that witchcraft had actually taken place, and witchcraft was a crime that was often very difficult to prove, of course. So in Spain, there aren't those sort of cases in the empire where the supervision of legal framework breaks down and you could use torture. The claims of witchcraft were then believed, because under torture you'd say more or less anything.
Professor Wilson, what a pleasure speaking with you. Peter Wilson, Professor of History of War at All Souls College at the University of Oxford in England. He will be presenting a lecture tonight. It's free of charge. I highly recommend it. Open to all. It's titled The Lecture, Tragedy, Violence, and Survival in Germany During the 30 Years' War, 1618 to 1648. And this is the annual, it's the 2018 Town and Gown Lecture that is presented by the University of Arizona Late Medieval and Reformation Studies. Should be an outstanding event. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Professor Wilson, thank you again for your support. And my wonderful producer and engineer, Bob Dio. Great job as usual, Bob. We'll be with you tomorrow. Have a great afternoon and evening.